Today is Monday, December 13th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Duofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, the EU discusses new round of economic sanctions against Russia.
Agreement position in order to have a stance, strong stance behind Ukraine, defending their sovereignty and territorial integrity.
Plus, the United States reaches grim 800,000 coronavirus-related deaths.
The United States reached 800,000 COVID-19-related deaths on Sunday, according to a Reuters tally, a number that exceeds the entire population of North Dakota.
Also, the UN condemns forced expulsion of asylum seekers and migrants by Libyan authorities. Our top story today is in Brussels. The European Union is discussing with the United States and Britain whether to impose new economic sanctions on Russia, but no decision will be taken on Monday, the bloc's top diplomat said. The EU and the US imposed sanctions on Russia in July 2014, targeting its energy, banking, and defense sectors, and is considering further measures if Russia tries to invade Ukraine after a troop buildup on its borders. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell told reporters as he arrived for a meeting of EU foreign ministers in Brussels that the group is in a deterrent mode. Western leaders fear an attack on Ukraine by Russia, which annexed Crimea in 2014, and backs separatists who control parts of eastern Ukraine and are fighting Ukrainian government forces. Russia says it has no intention of invading Ukraine and accuses Kyiv of deploying half its army to confront the separatists. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell.
Yesterday we had the G7, and it was a strong agreement position in order to have a strong stance behind Ukraine, defending their sovereignty and territorial integrity. We are going to discuss with the ministers today. We are on the turn mode, on the dissuasion mode, in order to the crisis to start. But in any case, we will send a clear signal that any aggression against Ukraine will have a high cost for Russia if this happens. But now we are trying to do our best in order to prevent this from happening. Well, we are not going to take any decision today about sanctions, concrete decisions about sanctions. We are studying together with the US and UK, which they could be, when and how, in a coordinated manner. But don't expect today decisions about it.
That's EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell. British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss said on Sunday that Russia will face, quote, massive consequences, unquote, if it attacks Ukraine. U.S. intelligence assesses that Russia could be planning a multi-front offensive on Ukraine as early as next year, involving up to 175,000 troops. The Kremlin denies it plans to invade and says the West is gripped by Russia phobia. Truss told reporters at a G7 foreign ministers meeting in Liverpool that the group of seven major industrialized countries are also concerned about the, quote, coercive, unquote, economic policies of China. The G7 comprises Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Canada, and the United States, and includes a representative from the European Union. On the nuclear talks with Iran, Truss said there's still time for Tehran to save the nuclear deal, but that this is the last chance for his negotiators to come to the table with serious proposals.
Is that the world's largest economies are united. We've sent a powerful signal to our adversaries and our allies. We've been clear that any incursion by Russia into Ukraine would have massive consequences for which there would be a severe cost. We have been clear at this meeting this weekend that we are concerned about the coercive economic policies of China. And what we want to do is build the investment reach, the economic trade reach of like-minded, freedom-loving democracies. That is why we are stepping up our investment into low- and middle-income countries. A couple of weeks ago, we launched British International Investment with an increased budget. And that is also why we are working with our friends and partners to help shape the future of technology, to make sure that technology is shaped by the free world, particularly standards in areas like artificial intelligence and quantum technology. This is the last chance for Iran to come to the negotiating table with a serious resolution to this issue, which has to be agreeing the terms of the JCPOA. This is the last chance, and it is vital that they do so. We will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon, and it is vital that they come to the table and are serious about the negotiations.
That's British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss. President Joe Biden is seeking to reassure Ukraine that his strategy to prevent a Russian military invasion will work amid continued tensions of a massive Russian troop buildup along their common border. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
President Joe Biden spoke Thursday with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to inform him of his phone conversation earlier in the week with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The calls came as the U.S. and its European allies are stepping up diplomatic efforts to persuade Putin to step back from potential plans to invade Ukraine, with nearly 100,000 Russian troops amassed near their common border. Putin says he is not planning to invade, but that he is threatened by Ukraine getting too close to NATO, and that Russia reserves the right to defend its security. Zelensky said in a tweet that he and Biden discussed ways to resolve the conflict with Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine's Donbas region that has killed more than 14,000 people. At a Thursday news briefing in Washington, State Department spokesperson Ned Price said that in some ways, concerns over a potential Russian invasion are bigger than worries about the people of Ukraine.
What Vladimir Putin seeks to do is to rewrite the rules of the international order, circumvent the idea that large countries can't bully small countries, that a country can, at the barrel of a gun, redraw borders. That cannot happen. It must not happen in today's world.
It's now up to Putin to step back from the brink if he wants to hold talks about security in Europe. Former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Bill Taylor told VOA.
He wants to talk about security, talks about European security. That's fine. You know, we'll talk about that as long as the Ukrainians are there, as long as the Europeans are there, because they're part of this discussion, clearly. But those conversations can't start until President Putin puts the gun down. You can't negotiate with somebody with a gun to your head.
Taylor said Ukrainians are still very concerned by the Russian military buildup on three of their common borders and by statements by Putin saying that Ukraine is not an independent nation. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Search and rescue efforts continue across parts of the United States hit by tornadoes and severe weather late last week. U.S. President Joe Biden declared a federal emergency in some areas and pledged the full support of his administration. Hundreds of thousands of people are without power or heat at the start of the coldest months. VOA's Arasha Rabasadi has more.
Tornadoes tore through several U.S. states, killing dozens of people, with Kentucky bearing much of the brunt, with 80 casualties reported. Officials expect those numbers to climb as the search for victims continues. These satellite images show before and after shots from Arkansas and Kentucky that capture the devastation of the historic storms that leveled entire communities and tossed rubble more than 160 kilometers away. As the winter cold creeps in, some survivors who lost their homes now seek safety in emergency shelters. Kentucky so far is the only state asking for and receiving an emergency declaration from the Biden administration. FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell says the agency has about 100 personnel there, including urban search and rescue teams, but adds the next challenge is taking survivors to safety.
Severe weather that happens in these cold months, it just makes the impacts of that even seem so much greater. And so again, working on providing safe and secure sheltering for individuals so we can keep them out of the elements is going to be a priority.
Six states suffered severe storms from Friday to Saturday. Several tornadoes touched down in the region, with one in Kentucky traveling more than 320 kilometers. Criswell says one of FEMA's goals is educating communities on their unique risks and types of mitigation projects to help lessen the impact of future disasters. Arasha Abbasadi, VOA News.
The United States on Sunday reached 800,000 coronavirus-related deaths, according to Reuters tally, as the nation braces for a potential surge in infections during the winter months. This report is produced by Chris Dingham of Reuters.
The United States reached 800,000 COVID-19-related deaths on Sunday, according to a Reuters tally, a number that exceeds the entire population of North Dakota. The milestone comes as the nation braces for a potential surge in infections due to colder weather pushing more Americans indoors and the highly transmissible Omicron variant. Even with vaccines widely and freely available, the U.S. has lost more lives to the virus this year than in 2020 due to the more contagious Delta variant and people refusing to get the vaccine. Health experts say the deaths in 2021, which account for 57% of the total U.S. COVID death toll since the pandemic started, were mostly unvaccinated patients. Other countries have lost far fewer lives per capita in the past 11 months, according to the Reuters analysis, which shows that among the wealthy G7 nations, the U.S. ranks the worst in terms of per capita deaths from COVID-19. Among the more than 200 nations and territories tracked by Reuters, the U.S. ranks 36th. The U.S. has the highest total of reported COVID-19 deaths in the world, followed by Brazil and India, according to the Reuters tally. New infections in the U.S. were averaging around 120,000 a day, with Michigan contributing the most cases. According to the Michigan Health and Hospital Association, COVID-19 patients were filling state hospitals at record levels, and 3 out of 4 patients were unvaccinated. The Reuters analysis showed that of the 10 states that reported the most deaths per capita in the last 11 months, 8 were from the country's south, with Alabama, Oklahoma, and West Virginia reporting the most deaths per capita from January 1st to the end of November.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. The World Health Organization says data from South Africa indicates the Omicron variant may result in less sickening illness than other coronavirus variants. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The World Health Organization says new cases of COVID-19 in Africa have surged by 93% this past week compared to the previous week. That brings the number of reported cases on the continent to more than 8.8 million, including more than 220,000 deaths. It is not known how many of these new cases and deaths are due to the Omicron variant. What is known, however, is Omicron has spread to about 60 countries, 10 of them in Africa. The WHO says almost half of the nearly 1,000 Omicron cases reported globally are in Africa, with the heaviest burden borne by South Africa. Richard Mahigo is the coordinator for immunization and vaccines development in the WHO's regional office for Africa. He says it is encouraging to note few of the many people infected with Omicron in South Africa have had to be hospitalized. He notes this suggests the new variant may cause less severe illness.
Data which looked at hospitalization across the country between 14 November and 4 December found that ICU occupancy was only 6.3%. which is very low compared with the same period when South Africa was facing the peak, which was linked at that time to Delta variant, and I'm talking about July this year.
Mahigo says that is a preliminary analysis. He figures it will take at least another 2 to 3 weeks to determine Omicron's full effects. He says researchers are working around the clock to see whether the new coronavirus variant is more contagious, more debilitating, and more resistant to current vaccines and treatments than other variants.
There is an assumption that the current vaccines may not protect people against Omicron. But so far, there is no conclusive evidence that vaccines are ineffective against this new variant. Vaccines have protected, as we know, people from severe disease and hospitalization due to the other variants of concern so far. And there's been no need to modify these vaccines.
Indeed, Pfizer and BioNTech say preliminary data indicate that a booster or a third shot of their coronavirus vaccine is effective against the new variant. The biopharmaceutical company says it is working on an Omicron-specific vaccine, which it hopes will be developed in the next 3 months. In the meantime, the WHO says it continues to support countries to improve genomic surveillance to track the virus and other variants of concern. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
6 years ago, nearly 200 nations signed a Paris Climate Accord where they agreed to keep the rise in global temperatures at 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. Scientists say that threshold is an absolute minimum to avoid catastrophic climate change. For VOA from Paris, Maria Galvan looks at the situation.
Our fragile planet is hanging by a thread. We are still knocking on the door of climate catastrophe.
As he wound up the recent COP26 in Glasgow, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres had that harsh warning for the 200 countries who had gathered to talk climate change and how to slow it down. Hanging over the summit was the deadline of 2030 for a drastic reduction of greenhouse emissions that was set 6 years ago at COP21 in Paris. Former Executive Secretary of the UN Climate Convention, Christiana Figueres, remembers it as a historic event.
It was a real breakthrough for the United Nations to have a completely unanimous, legally binding pathway for decarbonizing the global economy.
Secretary of State at the time, John Kerry, signed that agreement for the U.S.
It really was an exciting moment when 196 countries come together simultaneously, all wanting to move in the same direction, understanding the stakes.
2015 was the hottest year on record. Scientists pointed to that as sure proof that global warming was real and serious. But that record keeps on getting broken as the planet gets hotter year by year. The World Meteorological Organization says the planet has been propelled into uncharted territory with rising sea levels, melting glaciers, and relentless extreme weather events. The WMO warns that extreme weather is the new normal. Nonetheless, both Figueres and Kerry remain optimistic.
We are moving in the right direction. The question is the timing. And I do feel that everyone came out of Glasgow with a renewed sense of timing.
Kerry is now President Biden's special envoy for climate. He was back in Paris this week as part of a whistle-stop tour of Europe to reassure leaders the U.S. is back in the game after former President Donald Trump shut the door on climate issues.
No one country can save this. Everybody has to act.
That was also perhaps the main takeaway from the Glasgow summit, as developing nations pleaded with their rich your neighbors not to be complacent with what has been achieved, but to keep pushing hard to meet that 2030 deadline to save the planet. Maria Galavan for VOA News, Paris.
Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is in Abu Dhabi to meet Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan. It is the first time an Israeli Prime Minister has publicly visited the United Arab Emirates. The issue of Iran's nuclear program is expected to be high on the agenda. Linda Grandstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's visit was announced just hours before he flew to the UAE, the first time that an Israeli prime minister has openly visited Abu Dhabi. Before departing on his trip, Bennett said,
I'll be meeting with Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed. We're going to be discussing ways to further our cooperation in a number of fields, especially strengthening our economic and commercial ties. In just 1 year since normalizing our relationship, we've already seen the extraordinary potential of the Israel-UAE partnership. And this is just the beginning.
Israel and the Emirates have long had close economic and security ties, but until just over a year ago, those ties were not public. Now, with the signing of U.S. brokered agreements known as the Abraham Accords, those ties have deepened even more. In 2020, during the administration of then-U.S. President Donald Trump, Israel, the UAE, and Bahrain signed the accords at the White House, normalizing ties between Israel and the two Arab countries. Morocco and Sudan later joined the accords. Israel's new ambassador to the UAE, Amir Hayek, says the meeting between the Israeli prime minister and the sheikh is historic.
The ביקור היסטורי, פגישה היסטורית בין שייח מוחמד בן זאייד, יורש העצר, לבין ראש הממשלה.
He said that the relationship between Israel and the UAE is a year-old baby who already speaks three languages, and there is a lot of excitement in the UAE about Bennett's visit. The Israeli prime minister traveled to the UAE with a small delegation and no journalists because of concerns about the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The issue of Iran and its nuclear program is expected to be high on the agenda. Israel and the UAE share a concern about Iran becoming a nuclear power. The meeting in the UAE comes amid tense talks between the United States and Iran on a renewed agreement on Tehran's nuclear program, which would see sanctions on Iran lifted. Bennett has continued to take a hard line on Iran.
Iran deserves no rewards, no bargain deals, and no sanctions relief in return for their brutality. I call upon our allies around the world, do not give in to Iran's nuclear blackmail.
Iran maintains its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes. The territory of the UAE is very close to Iran. Iran as a nuclear power would pose just as much of a threat to them as to Israel. Bennett's visit is expected to deepen already close security and intelligence ties between Israel and the UAE. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The United Nations Office of the High Commission for Human Rights is condemning the forced expulsion of asylum seekers and migrants by Libyan authorities, warning of the risks many face when returned to the homes they fled to escape persecution. Lisa Schlein again reports for VOA from Geneva.
Two large groups of Sudanese are among those forcibly deported from Libya over the past month. United Nations monitors say most have been summarily expelled from the Ganfuda and Al-Kufr detention centers. Both centers are controlled by the Interior Ministry's Department for Combating Illegal Migration. The monitors say the Sudanese apparently have been transported across the Sahara Desert to the Libya-Sudan border and dumped there. The UN Human Rights Office says Libya's expulsion of the Sudanese asylum seekers and migrants without due process and procedural guarantees violates international human rights and refugee law. UN spokesman Rupert Colville says the group of 18 Sudanese expelled Monday reportedly were arrested, detained, and arbitrarily expelled. He says no hearing was held to assess their need for protection from persecution, torture, and other abuse in their home country. He says they were not granted legal assistance.
Those expelled have often already survived a range of other serious human rights violations and abuses in Libya at the hands of both state and non-state actors, including arbitrary detention, enforced disappearance, trafficking, sexual violence, torture, and ill treatment.
Colville says other migrants from Sudan, Eritrea, Somalia, and Chad, including children and pregnant women, also have been detained in recent months. He says they either already have been expelled or are at imminent risk of deportation.
Now of immediate concern is the group of 24 Eritreans who are currently being held in the same Ganfuda detention center and who are believed also to be at risk of imminent deportation. On the 3rd of December, we were informed that in a pattern of mirroring the experience of the expelled Sudanese, they had been transferred to the Al-Kufra Detention Center in preparation for their deportation.
The UN High Commissioner's Office is calling on the authorities to protect the rights of all asylum seekers and migrants in Libya. It says they should investigate all claims of violations and abuse and bring perpetrators to justice in fair trials. It urges Libya to meet its obligations under international human rights law, which prohibits collective expulsions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A spike in violence has deepened hunger and poverty in Haiti while hindering the very aid organizations combating those problems in a country whose government struggles to provide basic services. Few relief workers are willing to speak on record about the cuts, perhaps worried about drawing attention following the October kidnapping of 17 people from Ohio-based Christian Aid Ministries. But several confirm they have sent some staff out of the country and have been forced to temporarily cut back aid operations. Gang-related kidnappings and shootings have prevented aid groups from visiting areas where they had previously distributed basic goods. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.